welcome to the I Know Strange People podcast, the podcast that explores what's unconventional in the creative process. I'm Jeffrey Morabito. Today I have Hollis Heikemer on the show. We had a very casual, pretty cool talk about quite a few different things, jumped around quite a lot. She is an abstract painter. She will be having a show at Hollis Taggart this upcoming September. And we pretty much just talked about what it is to be an artist, how she got started, all the different places she lived, the many jobs she had when she lived in New York, and how she is doing living in the rural New Hampshire now. So this is Hollis.
Peace.
Hey. How are you?
All right. Do you want it this way? Wait, we're not doing the visual, right? So.
No. I mean, the visual part is just so like I can feel like I'm actually talking to you rather than just like a phone conversation, you know?
Uh-huh.
And hold on a second. I'm trying to get rid of my own face. It doesn't matter. But anyway.
Whatever. Okay. Yeah.
So good to see you.
Yeah, great to see you. Where are you at? Where is that, your studio or your apartment or?
This is my studio.
Cool. Looks great.
At least maybe less exactly 2 months more.
Okay.
Then I get to do the whole the whole routine of moving studios and looking for a new spot and all that.
Right. Yeah.
Somehow I always lose paintings whenever I move, but I also find paintings that I lost last time. So
love it. You're right. Actually, it's kind of, I know I've lost things along the way and then, it's okay though, but that's nice to find them again. That would be kind of fun. Yeah.
I have these weird moments every now and then where I, apparently other people have told me that I'm like anxious about getting a new studio, but I have weird epiphanies where like, oh, I remember like when I moved studios that time, so-and-so in like 2015, I lost that painting and I didn't realize I lost that painting then. Or I made myself forget I lost that painting because I just didn't want to face up to it. And it just reoccurs to me now. So
yeah, that's kind of good because I think it's good to have like a punctuation, don't you think? Like a little memory spot to kind of anchor the moment, you know?
It is. And it's not, I mean, it's good. I mean, it's kind of very contradictory because it's good to have that punctuation, but sometimes it kind of just breaks up your flow, I guess. And sometimes it's, I don't know. Sometimes when I've had to, I remember 1 year I had to move, not maybe over a period of 2 years, I had to move studios 5 times once.
Well, yeah, that's too much.
And like, I kind of had like worked a very specific way because I couldn't get settled in then.
Right.
So then it was kind of weird for me afterwards, not have any punctuations afterwards.
Right. And well, I can see why you're anxious about your next studio. I would be too, just in the sense that you're not quite sure, you know, studios have kind of vibes to them, right?
Right. And yeah.
To what you're, even if you have it's even like an artist residency, even though if you have an idea, you know, it doesn't make a difference because it's not going to, that idea is just not going to pan out. You might as well just go with the flow and see what the studio gives you or whatever the residency, you know, brings about kind of thing. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at your CV like 2 minutes ago and I saw that you went to the Vermont Studio Center.
Yes.
I went there and I was, I mean, for me, it was kind of a mind blowing thing because I realized like it kind of like helped me be more spontaneous with my work a little bit. It made me hate hippies less. I'm still not the biggest Grateful Dead fan, but.
I didn't even notice that part. That's funny. Huh?
Well, I didn't meet any Grateful Dead fans there, but I met a lot of Fish fans. And
Fish. Yes. Yes. I know what you mean, though. Like kind of a classic Vermont person, kind of, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And, basically it also was kind of interesting because I kind of grew up in cities my entire life and lived in them. I never imagined like any appeal living out at a place like Vermont, and you're next door in New Hampshire. So.
No. Yeah. I lived in New York City and went to Vermont Studio Center. I took the train out there, train up. Mm-hmm. And then someone picked me up who worked at the Vermont Studio Center. And I went there, and I have to say it was really quite supportive. It was a really interesting, it's a really great place. It's just, it gives you whatever you are ready for at the time, like anything in life, really. But I think, you know, because it takes care of your feet, you know, feeding you, it really takes care of you. And, you know, I don't think I've ever had that experience ever. Except for when I had a parent taking care of me, right?
Mm, right. Like, yeah, pretty much.
You basically have to cook, you have to figure out how to, you know, fend your way through life. But in there, you're just there. And they're like, here you go, do your thing, and we'll take care of the rest for you. It's so wonderful. That is, you know, it's golden.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I started doing, which I've never done pretty much beforehand, was, normally, I guess I find ways to distract myself, procrastinate, if you will. And since you're being taken care of, you don't have those things to procrastinate on. And I would actually willfully choose, like, you know, I'm not going to paint today. I'm not going to be productive. I'm just going to go on a hike or just start walking and have no direction, really. And that's kind of like the most, at least for me, that's a very important state of mind to be in, which it's very easy to forget when you wake up in the morning and try to get started and you realize, yep, wait a minute, I'm just going through the motions rather than actually like pursuing something else.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's true. It's exploration. And then you need that as an artist. You need exploration. You need like what some scientists call like just daydreaming or whatever. You need to just find yourself nowhere and be able to visualize all kinds of things that you haven't even thought about yet. You know, things that haven't even gotten into the scope, as like you said, because you're already, you know, you're waking up and you already got things, you know, whatever. It depends upon what your head trip is in the first thing in the morning. But, you know, you could have a whole list of things you supposedly have to do that day. And you're just like, that is going to be your directive for the day. Yeah, you know, really? Do those things really need to get done? You know, so, you know.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you paint every day?
Yep, I paint every day. But I can take a day off. I can take a day off when I need to do other things and get things done. But I like to paint every day. It's not like it feels right. It's kind of, it goes in that direction, but there's days when it just doesn't feel right. It's kind of like some days you just feel like I don't know, for me today, actually, I didn't paint at all because I'm out. I did a few, I have a show coming up, so I had to do some of the busy work of that, but then it's so hot, like everywhere. Right. So I went out onto the lake and did this paddleboarding thing, which is like my third time doing it, but I was, so that's basically, I just totally had a wonderful day taking in just everything, just the whole environment. Yeah.
This is actually a pretty good question to, I guess, ask you. I mean, I know you and Alex somewhat well for quite some time now. And this is a question I ask myself sometimes. More, especially this past year when, I guess my busy life kind of fell apart. what to do besides make art.
Yeah.
That, I mean, you think maybe, you get stuck into these mindsets of like, I should be productive, you know? And I kind of find myself and maybe some other people I know, I see this in other people and I see myself doing this more. I see myself and other people when they do this, when they go out and, go out partying and getting drunk just as a way just to stop working, you know, rather than just like, let's say sitting down and reading a book or something, or I don't know, staring at the shadows on the wall. So I guess I'm like asking myself and just, and you also, what is there to do besides make art?
Okay.
Okay. It looks like
you kind of. I'm just saying, we're up in here in the woods and this kind of thing doesn't surprise me. So you froze for me. So
you
that's what
I was also. And I was talking to your frozen face for a while, wondering why you weren't responding.
Sorry.
Well, that's okay.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, you know, that was, what did we call that? A punctuation?
We did. We called that a punctuation. Yep. Yeah.
That's, maybe that was a sign we were getting ahead of ourselves.
There you go. I like that. Okay. Yeah.
So, we'll circle back for sure though.
Okay.
Where did you start off? Like I saw that you went to school in Ohio, but you also went to school in Jersey. Where are you from originally?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm from upstate New York, which is in it and near Binghamton. It's a little town called Vestal, like Vestal Virgins. And, that's where I was raised, in Johnson City and Vestal. My parents are actually from the same area, or were. And that's it. So then I moved to the New York City. And then when I met Alex, I moved to Philly. And then after a while, we moved up here. So that's like the geographical location section of my life. So So it's pretty based in the Northeast.
Okay. What made you move from where you grew up to New York?
It was the city? No reason. It was just easy.
Okay.
It was really, I didn't have any idea about New York. It's just always, I went there when I was a kid and constantly I had aunt and uncle there and no big deal. I didn't have any idea of what to do. I just went there. I got a job, you know, whatever. Just like did my thing and just stayed there for 10 years.
Hmm.
So, yeah, really, I never really felt either a connection or a disconnection. It's just a city to me. Like I know, like I met people who came in and left.
Right.
That's with really an idea. You know, like whatever it is, like they're going to like, you know, like, what is it? Frank Sinatra song. They're going to make it. Right. And they had that, whatever it is, the idea, and they wanted to make it happen. But I just, because it was a city and I guess it's just because it was close by and, you know, I had gone to it so many times. I didn't have any illusions or any idea. It was just really just one city. Easy.
Mm.
I could move there, move in and no big deal. That's that.
And were you, painting before you came to the city, or was that part of the plan or just something you picked up, I guess?
No plan whatsoever. Yeah. I just went because like I said, it was easy and I wasn't painting. I eventually got a sublet that had homosote in the back. It was one room. And then I had this kind of, the carpenter that had lived there created this space. So the back room was homosote. So you could actually just tack anything to the wall, right? So I went and got canvas and I tacked it to the wall. I got some Acrylics at the time, Golden, and also Art Guerra, which was right down the street, and just started going at it. And then I always took classes when I was young, when I was a kid, but I kind of gave that up for a while. So that's it. I just started doing it. And then I was just like, forget that. Forget everything else. Everything else, like job, full-time job, any kind of career, whatever you want to call it, that people call it, you know, when you work your way through a corporation some idea of a profession.
One of those people who had a, because I was one of those people thinking for a long time, even when I was spending all night painting in high school, and people thought I was like getting messed up in the evenings when I was really just not sleeping and making art. But even at that point in time, I thought I was going to be one of those people with a vocation, you know? Like, was that you? Did you think you were going to be one of those like normal type people?
Yeah, well, I didn't. I think it really is? It's like what you see around you is what you kind of can, it limits your imagination. I mean, you can,
okay,
but you can, it limits your imagination in the sense of possibility. So you're like, okay, I know these people do this or do that. But actually, I never had a particular image. I just thought that I would be doing something, but I never really, I'm kind of not a person who plans or visions too much. I'm not quite sure why, but I kind of like just go with the flow and also have a drive at the same time. I don't know how those things work, but like, I know it's important to me. I don't know how it's going to transpire into anything, but I'm just going to do it. So basically that's what happened. I just started doing it, painting more and more. Everyone I met was supporting that more and more. And any kind of idea of, like you said, vocation, professional life, you know, career, you know, up the ladder kind of thing, just kept on going down, 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 down on the totem pole. Like, who cares? Whatever. I don't even, but I never bought into it in the first place. But I'm not quite sure why. It's just, it was in the peripheral. Like, yeah, I guess that's how people make money. And this is how we're going to get along in this world. But it's just, I mean, I worked everywhere in New York. I worked from Wall Street to, you know, I worked as a teacher. I worked up in a community center in Harlem back in the 80s, teaching English to welfare recipients. I was everywhere and in just exploring and using my, I guess my, my interests in connecting with people and making the world kind of better and just somehow figuring that out, how am I going to express that somehow?
Right. Yeah. I've had quite a few jobs in my day.
Yes.
Well, I mean, for me, it's pretty amazing the fact that I'm still not at a certain point, I guess, and really only in the last few years, I've stopped adding different types of jobs to my CV.
Do you actually have a like a CV with all your I guess non art related jobs? I've never done fun.
I did at one point in time, knowing, especially not, I would say recently, but maybe like, I don't know, maybe over like 10 years ago or so, where I had to think like, all right, well, what did this type of work, where does this line up with what job I am applying for? Or maybe even like more in the last few years, not very recently, but every now and then I'd look it up and like fantasize, like, can I fit into this job? Because I do need a job.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
And now I've actually realized I'm mostly doing some of the most lowest form of work an artist can do, adjunct teaching.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's tough. That's a tough, I don't know if it's the lowest. It's just, It's their
lowest pay, actually.
Yeah. Oh, it's the lowest on how they're treating you, maybe. That's, you know, that's a little different. Yeah.
Well, I think the people I meet and the people I teach, they definitely treat me very well. Somebody behind a desk somewhere is not regarding me that well, but most of the time I never get to meet those people. So
yeah, I hear you. Yeah, that's good. Yep. Yeah.
But do you think doing all those types of jobs before, did it feed into you being an artist?
I don't know if it feeds in, but I enjoy it. I used to think, oh man, I should start painting earlier. You know, like I should be doing something a little earlier in age. Right. But I just took a longer route. I took a more variety. I didn't start out being a painter in high school and all the way till this moment. So I had fun, and it was a lot of different stuff. And it's always surprising. I think it gives you a different vantage point. And I think it also gives you maybe even a, I don't know. I don't know, because I only can have my own point of view, and which is kind of can't get away from myself. But I kind of think it might help with getting a bigger picture of how things work, and maybe that part of my what I take in and how I translate it into painting. Mm-hmm. In a sense, not so focused, but like I said, I don't think I was a super focused person in the first place. I am. But it's in a different way, in the sense of I'm not looking for a result from what I'm thinking about. I'm just thinking about it, or I'm experiencing it, but I'm not necessarily always looking for the end result or the outcome. I'm more into the process, to say.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's that. Definitely, that type of thinking doesn't work in today's modern consumer world. I understand very much what you're saying, because I think the same way most of the time, and I've had to push those thoughts back whenever I had a job interview or something. Even teaching, you know, you're expected to have results.
Right. Right.
But which is, you know, it is what it is, you know, and I think inadvertently I have results. I mean, I think the paradox is I think I get the best results, of course, when I don't have any expectations.
Right. Exactly. That's it. And I mean, that's just the way, you know, you and I are wired. And then I'm glad there's other people who are just thinking about the result, or what the outcome should be based on, and think about what needs to be done to get to that outcome. That's fine too. You know, it's like, it's just not the way I'm navigating for some reason.
There's this, I have no idea if it's from, I remember the year when I read this quote from either, I forgot where what book this is from. It's funny how you forget where something is, remember the exact time when you've read the book and what year it was. But I remember in this book, it was talking about how the label human being is incorrect and it should be called human becoming.
Cool. Sweet.
Because you're always changing into your next state.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
So, yeah. But I remember and I've actually tried to remember, I think when I emailed you beforehand, that we had a conversation in the gallery a few years ago where I thought, like, just instantly, oh, wow, this needs to be continued.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, I forgot what that conversation was.
I can't think of it either. I know it was a very intense, there was some kind of different perspective we had about something. Not completely different, but in the details of we were hashing them out, right?
I remember so much about the conversation, except the actual details of what it was about.
Yeah.
I know through my perspective, it was about where it seemed that you wanted to take the conversation about, I was talking about what, like something about art in terms of maybe something in like the, in the sphere of like art world, perhaps, or art language or art dialogue. And you wanted to talk about it in the more like personal sense, like the more inner sense. I mean, for me, maybe that's not even the proper labels, but I know for myself, I try to consolidate the two. Like I have got like what art is to everyone else and everything from like the general public to galleries or art world, whatever. And then I've got the other better thoughts of the other world, which is just purely what's within myself and just what's in the gallery and never leaves. I mean, what's within the studio and never leaves the studio.
Yeah. Well, you were, I think when you think about it, you wear many hats. So when you curate a show, which you do very often, I think you have to think about the connections. And so you kind of have to think about the viewers, the people, why those pieces go together. And so I think you are thinking about the art world versus, I mean, first of all, you wouldn't even come to that. And then that connects. I mean, this is how I can see it. Then that connects with your personal, what is important to you. Why would you even have the show if it wasn't important to you? So that part you might not get all the way to the bottom but you would have, because you would be discussing it with a broader audience. So maybe you feel that, is it something like that? Is it like there's how to translate that? And also, I have to say, how much personal do we need to give? We're giving it in our paintings.
Right. Right. Exactly. I mean, sometimes I think definitely more so before, and you know, I try to be humble with myself and know that I still might get to the point where I'm thinking about my art too personally. And that, I feel like that's a very, I don't know, is the right way to put it, like a very young way to look about it. But, you know, you kind of, I think most people realize they need to step outside of themselves rather than just keeping it so personal.
Well, it depends upon what the personal means. I think it's because the personal can be, personally, I have this kind of life. I have all these stories going on in my head and I have all these actions and reactions that I take or whatever, right? That's human. But there's also the personal, and maybe this is the, becoming, right? Instead of the becoming that I think we all share as just our species of human being. So so I think that is what, that's the nuance of the personal, maybe. I don't know. I'm just thinking this because you just mentioned it. Because it's the personal, and we're talking the personal, the rhythm and the nature of ourselves as we explore this world. And we're trying to communicate in the language that we somehow found ourselves in. And we also are connecting to these colors and shapes, and this is how we're communicating. So within that, that connects to someone else in a way that is unexplainable. So that is actually personal in a sense of personal to something deeper within all of us as a human being. And I'm deeper, I'm using it. That doesn't mean it's deep. It just means that it's within us as as something. I don't even know. It's like a mystery. But then there's the personal, like, noise that we all have. That is not so interesting.
Right.
Because, you know, that we can just, it's kind of, you know, all the bitching and all the criticism and all the whatever. I don't know. It's just everything. I mean, it could be a lot of good things and bad things, whatever, but it's all kinds of stuff that's going on. And that's just the noise. And we have enough noise. We don't. So I don't think that's what connects us, the noise. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think it really depends on what mood I'm in sometimes. I mean, sometimes I think the noise is very important because it's the product of the process that I have to take, because it's how do I get away from the noise is a big part of it. How do I get away or take advantage of my own neurosis? You know, it's like, I like to be a very orderly person. And like before I can feel it when I'm beginning to really want to paint a lot and intensely. That's like, I begin to clean my studio. I clean my palette and I sweep. I don't sweep my own home that much. And then very quickly, my studio becomes like a car accident. It's just a catastrophe, you know? So it's kind of almost like I have to expunge my own noise in some silly way, I guess.
Yeah, I do. I do think that we do. I know I have little tricks like that. I definitely do a little cleaning. Cleaning is always good in the studio and at home for like repetitive, rhythmic, almost like body, mind. Let's get it together. Let's put it together. You know, like sweeping, but also like a little, like you can also maybe just a little pause, a quiet pause and just, and see the garbage go by or the little, you know, whatever it is that's in your head.
Right.
And I do like to clear that out and then get down. And then I feel like I'm coming from a place that's active, creative. It's giving, it's connected, and it's not something that's reactive to anything. It's not depleting of anything. It's coming from the place that, I guess, that personal is what I'm, that's the definition of that personal. But there is also the other personal, because we're all fluctuating continuously through one or the other, you know?
Right, right. I mean, in the past, I've maybe changed some things about myself, like in terms of being like what I paint and how I paint. By choice or because I just needed some sort of change. And of course, this past year, it was a change that was not a decision. It just kind of happened.
Yep.
And I had no choice but to, you know, change how I painted also through it, because it's, I don't know. It's, I feel like as an artist, you're just kind of a bit of, my antenna is always up. So depending on how things are going on in the world around me, I have to react to it. And I, even if I think I'm independent of it, I'm still, the way I get to how I'm independent of it is still reactionary to what's going on around me.
Huh? Yeah. I guess, yeah. I mean, let's, when you think about it through, we have to get to the painting, right? To the actual, the brush is in our hand, the paint is on the brushes, and we're going towards it. We don't even remember that. That happens, right?
Right.
And so to get there, and then once we get there, everything falls away. Whether, I mean, you aren't even there, really.
Well, you know, that's, there's a very famous Philip Guston quote, where he says how called studio ghosts, where when you first start painting, you have all your teachers, your friends, your influences, all the ghosts that exist in your studio. And eventually, the longer you paint, they leave. And if you get lucky, you leave the studio and the painting paints itself.
Right. So that's basically what we're doing. We're just that, just getting ready to something, whatever that is. And it's so amazing, right? It's great.
For me, it's sometimes it's amazing when it's actually happening. I mean, it makes me, it used to be much easier to get to that place where I could paint when I used to be able to smoke, but.
Okay. Yeah.
It was, for years I had, I was living in China for years and terrible habit, but very good for painting. I was able to smoke indoors all the time. Now I don't really even smoke cigarettes that much outdoors. I should have that's one theme to go, what to do when you quit smoking as an artist. Well, let me ask you this, and you might've already answered this previously. Why paint abstractly instead of representationally?
I don't even know. I just started painting and this is what I'm painting. I did, when I was a kid, go and take some classes with a woman down the street from me, Mrs. Robinson. And she, we did, let's see, what do you call that? Still life. And we just discussed. And then we did pastels and charcoal drawings. And we look at Degas. It was just that time. And she was wonderful. And I would go there every Saturday and we would do some drawing and then we'd have a tea and then we'd do a more composition of some kind of still life. And I don't know. When I started painting, like I said, in that almost apartment that I had in New York, I just didn't, this is what I started painting. And I did go to Art Students League to see, because they have those, you can just get in there and see figures or you can take whatever class, right?
Right.
In New York. And I just am not interested in that. I just, it doesn't excite me. I don't, who knows? So.
I feel like you said before that you're into the big picture and you're into connecting people in a very personal way. So at least in my mind, in my abstract imaginary world, I'm thinking, well, that's a good way. Is that possible to do through something that's representational? How do you have a real big picture if it's actually something definitive that you're looking at?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I've tried to take, some drawing classes in a figure drawing class. I end up just not connecting to it, but I am connected to people, but you're right. I think it's, now that you say it, I think it's just on a experiential level. That's really what I come away with. More than, the way someone looks or the way but that's not even the reason why I don't think a lot of people do figurative, work, but it's just, who knows? You know what? Who knows? That's just what I started doing. And I know some people decide to do stuff like that sometime in their life. I don't know what that decision making process is because I never made it. I just started painting and that's, came okay. out.
Do you believe in something, in the concept of, let's say, destiny for the artist?
Oh, what do you mean? Tell me. What does that mean?
Do you think maybe you were always meant to find that apartment and start painting there? That may, because sometimes I think of, in terms of like the part of myself that kind of just goes with the flow and just goes with things and doesn't try to will the world around me. Also that part thinks like, well, everything is falls into place because it's meant to be. There's a certain like path already set and that I'm just by stepping up to it, I'm just following that path. I guess that's what I mean by like a certain destiny for an artist's destiny.
Yeah.
Which sounds weird when I say that out loud, but.
Yeah, I think from my experience as of today in this moment, I can say that I think the less you try to, okay, the more you go, you of course you're going to make choices and things happen in your life and in your studio and et cetera. But I think that, and this has to do with that noise in your head. I think as soon as you start creating actions or reactions to the stories that you're telling yourself about your future or that some kind of thing in the past, that is when you knock yourself off and you just, that in your destiny word, that would be knocking yourself off the destiny. Although you being a human, you would have to make those choices and have those faulty off the path things. So they're actually part of the equation, but you know, yeah. Something like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's maybe not with painting, more so with just, or maybe things associated with painting. Sometimes if things are going too well, I get a little suspicious.
Yeah. Well, that's because I don't know. I don't know if I get suspicious. Well, I don't know if everything ever go. I think there's always an element of everything in every moment. You know, it can go well, but I think that's that thing with this story. You know, you can start to react to that story so that you start telling yourself that it's too good. But don't be telling yourself it's so good. And then you won't.
Right. It's funny because as we're talking about like the story you tell yourself, and about that noise that you tried to get away from, it sounds maybe not that so much, but some other things. At times you talk like you could be a representational narrative painter.
Oh, how funny. Yeah. Oh, and the stories. I'm using the word stories. Yeah. How funny. That's funny. Well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I've been reading a lot of Murakami this last year and a half.
I picked up my first Murakami book in like five. I used to love reading him, and I finally picked up a new book of his, the one about the painter that just came out.
Oh, cool. So are you reading it right now?
Right. Yeah.
Or did
you? I'm like maybe one third through it.
Cool. Oh. So I just like there's a story there, but there's a depth of the humanity that how we relate to each other. I mean, it's basically, that's why I love his books, because they're basically, I guess, what I'm interested in, or at least noticing the same thing he is. But he just goes, that book is so fun. I love that. So I'm not going to say anything about that book because I want you to finish it and then we'll have a conversation.
Oh, great. Yeah. It's funny. His books, I mean, I tell people sometimes he's one of those figures that's become so popular that people look at him, I think, more toughly than they should, or more critically, which for me, I think that's just bullshit. when it comes to like writers or music artists, I like the most accessible, wide, mainstream ones to the most inaccessible ones. Like it's not a thing for me, you know? But with Murakami, I always feel like he has this like window into his inner monologue that he has. And especially with a longer book, like for example, he's got this one short story where he talks about making spaghetti and that's it. And it's only like a page and a half or something. It's one of his, like, I think The Elephant Vanishes is a book of a lot of short stories. But even that small short story, you kind of get a glimpse of his inner monologue. And it's at a certain point, you almost believe that's your own inner monologue.
Right. That is what's fascinating about him. And that he can find a way to get into that, like you said, inner monologue, but the inner monologue and how that translates into what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and then how you're relating and then how that person's relating to you or how you're relating to the world and the choices that you make. And I don't know, I think that he has, that's what's special about it, because I think it is what we already have. So it's reflected that we have all that at once. So anyway, it's been great to read. I read him before the pandemic, but I just read a lot of him during this pandemic. He's really, he's been my bud. He's like my buddy.
Right. He's, have you ever read his book, Things That I Think About While Running?
Yeah, somebody recommended that to me a long time ago because I run. But it's funny because it's not my favorite book because, yeah, that's what we think about when we're running. I felt like I have my a person that I relate to in the sense that there's so many things that go on in your head every day, all the time. But when you're doing a repetitive motion, then if you're not result oriented, if you're not like running a race, then you are in that space that that is just noticing things and noticing yourself and noticing how you're noticing your own little thing about noticing. You're like, you're just like in yourself, looking at yourself over there. It's like you're constantly. And I think that's what his books are. They are that whole thing. You're in your head. You can't get out of it because you're so stuck in it. And then you see yourself in your head and then you're out of it and it's beyond. And then you're just continually, you're recognizing the environment around you. And then you're back in your head and like, here we go again, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think now that I'm reading is like, I think his newest book. Yes. The newest one that came out because I lost track of him for quite a few years. Kind of was like a refreshing, made me realize why I like him so much. It's a little bit that in the monologue he has, it's reading him and seeing, feeling like experiencing his inner monologue that he does so well. It gives you a certain affirmation about your own inner monologue and makes it more okay, rather than just, you know, feeling like a little mad and mumbling to yourself.
Right. Well, we can all get a little mumbling to us. I think when you spend a lot of time in your studio alone, you can like start talking out loud to yourself. But yeah, I think I especially recently his books with the well, I think is a great way. It's such a great symbol for going deeper, going in and within yourself. It's a reflection. It's such a great, for me anyway, he could be like, who knows what his reasoning, or if he even had one, it just could be visual. This is where, this is how it's going to be. But that's how I thought, wow, that's great. Like you just get, there are those pauses in life. And look at, like our whole world had one last year where you go, you don't have to. But if you are ready and you're okay with it and you feel safe enough, you can go down into something that's unknown and you're with the ability to come back out. So it's really, anyway, I see that in his latest books and the one you're reading. And
right. That's an interesting caveat that you mentioned about the ability to come back out.
Yeah.
Because I think it's, I think a long time ago, I used to think, because I guess I was always, maybe even not painting, but I was always drawing and making art, and I never took being an artist like as a serious vocation to a certain degree. Maybe tax-wise it's still not, but but the reason why I guess you can say I avoided it, because I always thought maybe it was, I could see myself, I had a sixth sense that was going to be difficult to get back out of the well.
Yeah, but you've gone into the well, so it's not such a bad place, right?
Right. I guess I also realize I've always been in and out of the well.
Yes. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing about the safety and the fear and all that. I mean, it really parallels kind of with what's going on in the world with humans. But I just think it also just deals, it's a personal, it's just what we can experience if we want to. It's really, you know.
Mm, right.
I mean, unless somebody's pushing us. Well, you know, really.
Yeah. what we can experience if we want to. So, okay. Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Is your move from Philadelphia to New Hampshire, is that you, can I take this as a metaphor for you not getting out of the well?
Oh, funny. That's interesting. No, you're still, everything is still the same as far as me, right? I mean, but you mean the environment obviously is different, but
I assume it's, I'm pretty sure it must be much more conductive to being in that creative place more.
But you know, I always carve out time to do that kind of thing, no matter where I am. So I don't know. I it's really just the intensity of the seasons and nature, and it just blows my mind. I never lived in a place that's constantly changing and surprising, and it's just amazing. So it's more of a change of what the stimuli is, I guess.
Huh. You know?
Right. Yeah.
So it's, so the constant change of the natural environment itself is what's kind of like feeding your work now.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny though, but you know, even when it's funny when I think about what I was looking at when I was in Philly and in the city, I was always looking at trees and stuff, you know, I mean, you know, it's what, and how that interplayed with what man made the environment. So there's, you know, I don't know. It's whatever's around as I'm noticing.
Right. So, you look at trees a lot.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of this, speaking of Murakami, have you ever heard of this Japanese word called, I might say it incorrectly, it's called komorubi. And it's one word that means the interplay of the shadows from the trees.
Onto something. Yeah.
Well, anyway, it was really good talking to you today.
Yeah. Great to see you too.
Well, that was a very cool conversation with Hollis. going into the well, huh? I wonder how many of you out there are currently in the well. With your work, of course. She sent me some images of her new paintings that's going to be up at her Hollis Taggart show in September, and, well, they're pretty fantastic. I'll definitely go out and check those out when they go. So, today's show, the music, was brought to you by Michael J. Vitale. You can check out more of his music on michaeljvitale.com. My own work can be seen at jeffreymarabito.com. I hope everyone out there is staying strange.